Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the 343 podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today, Benny wanted to talk about building out of the back. What is the history of building out of the back, whether it be internationally or more importantly, because this is for American soccer after all, more importantly, what is the history of building out of the back here in the United States? When did it start picking up some steam and where is it now? That's what today's chat is all about. First, we start off talking a little bit about the global superstar, the budding phenom, the budding Ballon d'Oro winner and GOAT, potentially, Lamine Yamal, the 17-year-old from Barcelona. My goodness, he's brought some excitement back to the football world after Messi and Neymar are basically well beyond their prime, over the hill, and there is no more pizzazz or glamour or excitement really to get up on the weekends and watch European football, watch Champions League football, watch international football, because those two guys were the party, but there's a new kid in town. So those are the two main themes for today. Of course, coaches, you need to go to 343coaching.com, especially if you're interested in building out of the back, how to build out of the back, how to train it. And I don't mean just looking at some diagrams or looking at those, you know, those animations that make the rounds on social media where they show you where all the positioning of the X's and O's go and the movement of the X's and O's. That's great and all, but you need to learn from somebody who's actually done it and actually is doing it. And you can witness them actually training the players and training the team. For that, you go to 343coaching.com. There are free and premium programs for you there. Don't wait another 3 months or 6 months or 5 years before finally getting on the path. And parents, we do not forget about you. You are critical to the development of your kids. For you, we've codified decades worth of experience at all the levels and all the ages and both genders. And ever since we've gone on to the professional level, we've codified all of that for you. And we made it available at 343masterclass.com. I repeat, coaches, 343coaching.com, and parents, 343masterclass.com. If you are coaching the little ones in the 7-versus-7 format, you go to 7v7coaching.com. And if you're already on that 7v7coaching.com email list, keep an eye out. We're going to be having a promotion pretty soon. All right, everybody. I hope you enjoy this one. Plenty of golden nuggets per usual. Plenty of stuff you don't get out in the mainstream on building out of the back. Were you able to relax and decompress?
100%. It was awesome. Yeah, man. The weather was good. The beach was nice. Yeah, we had a great time, man.
How was the water? Did you go in?
Oh, yeah, dude. I mean,
see any fish?
100%, dude. They swim up right next to you, dude. That's crazy. Now that I'm back, I'm refreshed and ready to go, dude.
Good,
ready,
brother.
Push even harder.
Do you have anything on the docket?
I do, but before we get into it, I quickly wanted to chat about Barca Inter, Lamine Yamal, dude.
Yeah.
This kid is so much confidence now. Like, even in the past, I would say, year, I mean, this kid has just grown so much on the biggest stage, dude. And I think that game was eye-opening for a lot of people, bro. Because, I mean, this kid was the best guy on the field, dude. And I saw that you posted on X, like, football has a future now, you know?
He's probably the best in the world right now.
You think so?
He probably, man. And yeah. He's 17 years old. It's the most ridiculous thing ever.
Yeah. It was incredible to watch.
Yeah. I met with Joey yesterday and we talked a lot about it as well. But one of the things that is most striking is how he makes it look so easy.
Right.
You have outrageously intelligent, physical, world-class or close to world-class players at Inter. And he just kind of skips by them. You know, yeah. And then it skips by them and then like, oh, look, I'm going to put it far post because it's wide open. And he just goes, duck a far post, you know, and it's a goal. But it looked like a playground scrimmage to him. So that's what's really weird.
Yeah, for sure. And he kind of almost did like the same move every time against the left defender, like a little fake body feint, touch it forward, service. There was one, just a simple turn where he acted like he was going to push forward. He body fainted forward and then turned. I'll have to find it and put it in. But to me, it's just like a little simple thing. But I was like, damn, dude, this kid has so much confidence right now. And I can't imagine where he's going to be the next 2-3 years.
Yeah, man. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. People think I'm joking when I say stuff like, oh, if we had that exact player with those exact qualities here in the U.S. when that player was 16 or 15, like it ain't happening like it's happening for him now. Like, okay, maybe he would have been given a homegrown contract. Maybe he'd be making 100K a year, you know, gross, and getting some minutes here or there. And that's about it.
Right. Do you think part of also his success is the environment that he's in and the players that he's grown up with around? Because like you said, if he was here and he's, you know, training with LAFC Academy or Galaxy Academy, I mean, he doesn't grow that much, no?
No, but that's why I say specifically that if that player was here in the United States with his exact qualities at age 16, right? So forget everything that happened before age 16. He is Lamine Yamal like he actually is at Barca at age 16. If you just magically make him appear here, it's over. Like he'll have a career, no question, because he's such an outrageous outlier, but he'd be nothing. He'd be a homegrown. He'd be thrown into some games here or there. Maybe he does something. Maybe he doesn't, because it depends on who you have around you as well. Remember when Pirlo came to the MLS? Pirlo, yeah, he was past his prime, obviously, but he was invisible. He couldn't do anything. And I'm not comparing Lamal to Pirlo because they're two different types of players. But in one respect, they're very similar. They're very smooth, clean playmakers that make amazing passes as well. Lamine just has a little bit more athleticism and finishing capabilities, perhaps. But the playmaking capabilities are very similar. And yes, like if you're in MLS, you have people making stupid runs or not making the runs or idiotic movements and not finding space. And it's just a completely different animal. So you don't shine.
100%. And do you think, obviously, you mentioned the players around him, right? But also, would he not get elevated because of his player profile? I mean, obviously, he's fast, but and I mean, a lot of people look at him and say, like, he's not strong. He's not big or strong. You know what I'm saying? So do you think he would get elevated into like a national team type environment? Or would he get overlooked?
No, I think eventually, again, because he's such an outrageous outlier, I think he would eventually be elevated to the national team. It's just, what does it look like there?
Right.
Yeah, and is he utilized properly there? See, the environment is just so important, Benny. The environment and who's doing the identifying and who is doing the managing, who's doing the coaching. Because as you well know, Ben, if you have a certain type of player as a coach, you have the capability of creating a team structure and system and identity such that a particular player can shine. And you can also have the absolute opposite effect. So if you don't create that system or structure for a particular player to shine, that player might become invisible or a liability to the team even. You know, the other thing I mentioned to Joey yesterday, Ben, was the reverse thing. For instance, if Efrain Alvarez, okay, who is an outrageous, outlier, incredible player, were transplanted in Barcelona at age 16 with Efra's exact qualities at age 16. Whatever it is that he had at 16, you transplant him in Barcelona, there's a very high probability, in my sincere opinion, that he would be a global superstar right now. Like global superstar, outrageous outlier, playing Champions League and crushing things and being in the news every week.
Environment is everything, dude. If you're not being trained and around the right people, then it can have a massive effect on your career. Somebody commented the other day, Gary, on the episode with you and Joe, basically asking, is it almost impossible for a young player, an American young player, to be successful in Europe because of like the rules and the visas and stuff like that? Is it possible?
Yeah, it's totally possible to go to Europe. I mean, there's countless players that have gone to Europe at the youth level even and have played there and are playing there. Just people haven't heard of them necessarily because they haven't broken out, or maybe they're in the lower divisions or in the lower tiers. And even some that might end up being kind of pro over there, maybe they're in the fourth division or the third division or who knows where, Benny. So can you? Absolutely. Does it mean that you're going to be a first division player in a top eight, top 10 league? Not necessarily. So I think I have responded to that gentleman in the YouTube comments with a handful of considerations. One is, what level are we talking about here? Because it's one thing to talk about, hey, this player just played the U-17 World Cup with the United States, right? Does he have a chance of going to Europe? Oh, obviously, the answer is of course. Or are we talking about a U-17 player in, I don't know, playing ECNL just randomly in some random team, or MLS Next in some random team? That's a different story. You know, it complicates things as well. And then there's the whole factor of, even if you did play U-17 World Cup with the United States, if you're in an MLS academy, you're kind of fucked, you know, because MLS owns you at that point. Even if you are not under contract, folks need to brush up on and learn what training compensation is all about. And so effectively, the player has a price tag on their head, even if they're not under contract. So if the player wants to go to Europe, there is a liability in place that club in Europe would have to pay your MLS franchise hundreds of thousands of dollars potentially, you know, for this player. So now it's a function of, does the club in Europe have the wherewithal to invest that kind of money in an unproven youth player? Yes or no? And usually that only happened with big clubs overseas. So we're talking already kind of like top five leagues that have the clubs that would be like, oh, okay, we like this 16-year-old. Sure, we'll drop 300K on him. But that's very difficult. It's a very difficult thing to overcome. And then another component, which I also mentioned to the guy, is do you have an agent that is willing to go to war with MLS to make the kid and the family's dreams a reality or not? Because they're going to put up a fight. They're not just going to let you go. And so, and the agent, see here, agents in the U.S., they don't work for the player. They want to be good with the franchises. They want to be good with the league. They want to be good in rubbing elbows with the general managers and the presidents of the franchises and the technical directors. You know, that's what typically all the agents here really care about, because they're, you know, their future prospects in large part are contingent upon those relationships. So do you have an agent that is willing to go to war? So you can see all the complexities involved. Can you go to Europe? Yes, you can. But look at all the factors you have to consider.
What about, Gary, the visa process? Because correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember Shuchu, like, didn't he get signed for like Ajax Youth Academy, and then he couldn't even play games because of where he was, something like that, right? So that's another hurdle to overcome. No, am I correct in that he was with Ajax and then he couldn't play games for like a year or two or something, right?
Yeah, 100%. So for folks who don't know, Shushu is a player that we had, that Brian had with that famous team. He's in the famous U11 video. He's an outside back. And at age 11, I think it was around age 11, I forget now, but around age 11, you know, he got, you know, globally recognized, right? And obviously we tried to help, you know, with all these viral videos, of course. And then Manchester City took interest in him, and with people that shall remain unnamed, this person or this group of people took him to Man City, right? And when they landed over there, the authorities in Man City are like, what are you doing here? Like, like, we can't do anything, because there is, again, this FIFA rule that until you're 16 years of age, you can't go to another country, another federation, and for footballing reasons alone. That's number one. Number two, every country in Europe has different visa requirements and residency requirements and work permit requirements. And England is one of the worst places on earth for a foreigner to have the opportunity to play there. So scrap that. And then, so he went to Holland, and Ajax, yeah, wanted him, was keen on him. And I think he even played a tournament with them or something. But you're right, to be registered as a player in the country and play in the conventional leagues and all that stuff, you're not allowed to. You are not allowed to until you're age 16. Or unless if your family moves over there and it's proven that is for non-soccer reasons, and that's just ain't going to happen, right? So it's a long story. I mean, the whole case went to CAS, which is the Court of Arbitration and Sport, you know, so there was lawyers involved, there's all kinds of stuff. But let's cut to the chase. It didn't happen for him. He wasn't able to. So yeah, he was kind of sidelined for several years. He even came back and played with Brian for a season at the Galaxy during that period of time. But now, you know, let's fast forward because he's a 2002. So he's 23 years old now. He's playing professionally in Holland, FC Dordrecht, in the second division. I think they're about to get promoted to the first division. He's a starter, plays every game. So obviously there's, you know, what's the expression? Kind of like a happy ending sort of thing to the whole story. Because look, he's only 23. I mean, you can be a pro until you're 33, if we're being real. So he could be a professional player for the next 10 years. So good for him. But yeah, to your point, the visa thing is a huge obstacle. So, and it, obviously it'll help if you have parents or even grandparents who are European, because then you could go through the court process and get yourself a European passport potentially. And then a lot of doors will open for you.
Did you advise these people that shall not be named? Did you advise them about like all of this stuff, or did you not know about it until it all happened?
No, we had a good idea that you couldn't do that, because we also had another experience with Ben Letterman, right? Yeah. Ben Letterman with, but it was all around the same time, you know, so the rules weren't as strict as I just laid them out. You know, it was in the process of becoming a rule through FIFA. Okay. So in that same time, Ben Letterman, who we facilitated going to La Masia, FC Barcelona, he went over there, played maybe a season or something like that. And it was on the same team, I think, as Takefusa Kubo also. And so during that time, FIFA rolled out this new rule. No player under the age of 16 is allowed to go to a separate country or separate federation for X, Y, and Z reasons and play football. And so Ben Letterman and Takefusa Kubo was also caught up in that mess. And so Ben Letterman was let go by Barcelona. Takefusa Kubo was let go by Barcelona. Take had to go to Japan and obviously get his start, his professional start in Japan, which is his native country. And Ben Letterman had to kind of flop around in the winds for a while until eventually landing in the Polish first division. So he plays in the first division of Poland with one of the best teams in Poland. And I think he's even played Europa League, if I'm not mistaken, because at some point they won the Polish league and that qualified them to Europa League. So all of that stuff was happening kind of in conjunction with Shushu going to Europe. So while I don't blame anybody, I think not enough homework was really done. And I am of the opinion of the type that you don't make massive moves unless things are in black and white, meaning contracts are signed, everything is good to go. You don't just hop on a plane and just go, okay, let's see what happens. Unless you have the resources to do so, then fuck it.
Right. But what's also interesting, Gary, is you would think if a team or a club like Manchester City is inviting you to come over and play with them, like you would think that they are aware of the rules and the process and the fact that you're not going to be able to sign him. So
I think again, there was confusion though, Benny, because all of this shit was happening all around the same time, you know? Right. So like maybe it's possible, maybe it's not possible. And what I know that a lot of clubs have done prior and during that sort of era, they try to fudge it so that, oh no, the family came over here and look, they have a job. Like the clubs would set them up with jobs over in Europe, you know what I'm saying? To actually get the player to be there. But so nobody knew how hard the rule would be enforced either, if that makes sense. So it was still kind of like, oh, okay, maybe we'll just take the risk, see what happens.
Yeah. It sounds like I need to go to Spain and get a job at McDonald's.
Yeah. And there's so many sidestepping because you can like incorporate, or people, I didn't do it myself, okay, but you can incorporate a business overseas, and there's obstacles to that, clearly. Incorporate a business over there, quote-unquote, hire people over there, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, that's insane, dude. Well, massive tangent, but I like it, dude. As we say, everything's connected.
Well, I think parents and coaches are kind of interested in that sort of topic as well. Maybe one of these days, not today, but maybe one of these days we can totally break down what is meant by training compensation and solidarity payments, because there's a huge misunderstanding here amongst the American demographic. They tend to think it's a good thing, right? That we should have training compensation. We should have solidarity payments. They they somehow think that that is magically going to incentivize development here domestically, which is it is not. Okay.
Yeah.
And secondly, I just described to you the massive hurdle that it places on players who want to go to Europe. It basically puts you in handcuffs. It basically puts you in jail. It basically makes you a slave, pardon the term, to these MLS franchises, because now they have, there's a liability there.
Well, maybe for the audience sake, Gary, just give a quick rundown, like a 2-minute rundown of what it actually is.
Well, I did. I already mentioned it to you. So yeah, let's do it another day, Benny, because if I just slap something together beyond what I just mentioned 7 minutes ago, it's not going to do it justice. This topic needs justice.
All right. There you go. Next week then, training compensation.
Perhaps.
All right, dude. Well, I wanted to continue on our discussion from last week and continue to build off of the masterclass tactical lessons. The next one that I wanted to get into was two of them. One in regards to building out of the back, and then the second one, losing your man. And I think both are pretty well interconnected. We'll be able to find some common ground on both of them. But just to start, Gary, when it comes to building out of the back, I think if you go to any local youth tournament nowadays, even, I don't want to say rec or signature leagues because that's not true, but most tournaments and most youth clubs, most youth teams, you see a goal kick and you're going to see a team attempting to build out of the back. Are they doing it properly and executing it at a high level? Probably not. But I think it has changed a lot from 10 to 15 years ago, where you would see the goalie just launching it forward, or if the goalie wins the ball, it's a long punt. I think now you're starting to see a major shift in majority of teams attempting and trying to build out. So I'm curious as to when Brian first started with his Rage team, did you notice that as well, where most teams were not building out of the back? And when he had that team, when he first started coaching, did he already have in mind, like, okay, I'm going to attempt to play out of the back as Barcelona does or Ajax does or the Spanish national team? Because I know that's where he got a lot of his stuff from. So did you notice that same pattern, Gary, 15 years ago, where majority of teams were not building out of the back?
Nobody was building out of the back, Benny. Nobody. If a team was building out of the back, I would remember it right now, because it would have been such a shock, right, for us to see. I would right now be able to say, oh yeah, that one team over there, blah blah blah. Nobody, Benny. Nobody. Okay. And if there was, like, say the keeper had it and they, you know, did not punt it, you know, from a goal kick or from his hands or anything, and instead did a short pass to a center back or something. If that were to happen, then that was probably the end of the passing sequence, you know, because then that guy would just launch it forward or try to make a pass forward, right? Instead of making a horizontal pass and just sustain, have a buildup, right? So nobody was doing it, Benny. I think Brian sincerely was the only one. And I think that was a huge reason for a lot of the success, because imagine you have 70% possession against all these teams, even against the best teams in the country or the best teams in the region or the best teams locally that we went up against. Brian was in charge. And the only issue there was scoring, of course, which we covered previously. It's like you could have 70% possession, but if you don't have a killer or two that guarantees you a goal or two or three per game, then you might lose the game because the other team will counterattack, have a handful of opportunities, as all teams do, or have some set pieces or corner kicks, and then you lose the game or you draw the game and you're bye-bye, right? So that's the story there, man. Nobody was building. Brian was the only one, and that was a huge ingredient to becoming remarkable.
Yeah, and this wasn't just happening at the youth level, though, Gary, no? I mean, you look at high school, college, even in MLS. I mean, I can't remember as a kid watching teams build out of the back. It would be the keeper sets the ball, pushes his team up, and everybody launches it forward, no?
Yeah, yeah. In MLS, it was the same thing, and in college, it was really, really bad. I'm going to repeat, sorry, folks, who have heard it before, but I think it's worthwhile repeating. I'll repeat it in the future. Brian proved at the youth level that this can be done when everybody was saying it cannot be done. Okay. And everybody was saying it cannot be done because, oh, these are American kids. They don't play soccer in the streets, in the favelas, like they do in Brazil or in Argentina or in Europe. And they don't watch games and we don't have a soccer culture. So it's impossible to do this at the youth level. You're crazy. So Brian proved everybody wrong. And then Caleb Porter proved everybody wrong at Akron in college soccer, because once Brian proved everybody wrong and we started criticizing college soccer, we wrote articles. You guys can go to 343.com and at the blog, right? And go back to 2009 to 2012 or something. And I was writing massive shit on college soccer, that they play like shit. They play jungle ball. They should build out of the back, all this sort of stuff. And people would criticize me and criticize Brian. Oh, you guys don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You're youth coaches. Like, it's easy at youth. You can't do it in college. It's much more physical. And you got all these substitution rules. So it's impossible to do it in college. Bullshit. Caleb Porter proved you were all bullshitting. You were just all incompetent. You just didn't know what you were doing. And then the same story repeated itself in MLS. Oh, yeah. Well, Gary, Brian, you do this at the youth level. And fine, Caleb Porter did it at college, but let's be real. The professional game is different, okay? You can't do this with men who are pros, and the game is so much faster and blah, 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 blah. And then it wasn't until Tata Martino, the Argentine manager who came from, you know, coached Barcelona, has a whole track record of, and coached Argentina, went to Atlanta United when it was a brand new franchise, mind you, brand new franchise. Okay. No roster, no nothing. And in his first season, he proved everybody wrong, building out of the back, having massive possession, winning games. And then he ended up winning MLS Cup and then saying, okay, peace, I'm out. So he proved it was all bullshit at MLS. And it's the same story now with the national team. You know, since Tata Martino did that, oh, well, maybe you could do that at MLS, blah, blah, blah. Let's be real. You can't do that to the national team. Who do you think we are? We're not Argentina. We're not Spain. We don't have the capabilities, blah, blah, blah. And we're still waiting to this day for it to be done at the national team. But they keep hiring dunces here. I believe in Pochettino, but Pochettino, you know, this is a process too, Benny. So it's not like you can just land a legit, you can't land Pep Guardiola at the U.S. men's national team, and within the first weekend, you know, you guys are playing like Spain or something like this. It ain't happening. And the reason it's a long process, it's not because you necessarily that you have to train the existing national team with the existing players to play the particular style. It's that it's a long process because you have to go out and identify players out there who are American, for instance, who have the right profile, and then bring them in. And those players may be invisible right now. They may not have ever been called to the senior men's national team, or may not even have been involved in the youth national teams for that matter, but they have the correct profile, but they're not shining at the pro level because they're under imbeciles, you know, in management. So you have to identify, elevate that particular class of player, and then architect the system to play the way that you want to play. So there are challenges, but 1,000,000% you could do it at the national team level too, Benny. I don't even know what your question was.
No, but Gary, that's also the hard part and a tough task for Pochettino, because you mentioned these players that maybe are the player profiles that he's looking for, and you say that potentially they're invisible right now. So then as a national team coach, when he starts to elevate these players or he chooses his guys, then he starts facing like backlash from the media or MLS, like who are these guys, and this guy has no idea what he's doing. And then even like when he brings those players in, maybe the first couple of games he loses, right? And then people start to say, what the fuck, Pochettino, this guy has no clue. So it's a hard task that he has ahead of him, dude.
1,000,000%. And the reason it also takes a while is that if you pick these unknowns, but that they have the right player profile and you elevate them to the senior men's national team, all of a sudden they're going to get interest from overseas, from Europe and all this sort of stuff. So it would take then getting that player to Europe, and there's obstacles there because MLS will throw up barriers and God knows what kind of monkey wrenches they'll throw into the mix. And Jurgen Klinsmann tried to do this. And this is one of the reasons that MLS had the media turn on him and smear him and stuff, because he was recommending to all the players throughout the youth national team and senior men's national team pipeline, get your ass to Europe now, right? And so that's a problem. But back to your point, also, it takes a long time, because once you elevate these correct players to the national team and they gain interest, you have to get them to Europe, and then they have to stay in Europe and get better. So maybe it takes like 2 or 3 years, you know, of them playing European football and honing their craft and getting more and more experience and better and better and better. And now you've got yourself a nice national team here that can play, quote unquote, the right way and actually be a contender.
All right. Are any of these player profiles, Gary, that would be successful in a possession-based system, do any of them exist right now in MLS? Or is it a majority of them going to be overseas? Because I know within Pochettino's first camps, I mean, the December camp, they call it Camp Cupcake, no? So, and also I feel U.S. soccer and MLS probably puts pressure on him to elevate certain MLS players, right? But do you think, like, when it comes time for the World Cup, you think there's going to be any MLS players on the roster?
Well, first off, I don't know how much pressure there is on him, because he just got hired, so he may have a lot of political capital to do whatever the hell he wants. Are there players in MLS now that have the correct profile? Again, it's hard to know, because the ones that have the correct profile usually are not given the necessary opportunities, and usually aren't in a team environment that where the coach knows how to also maximize their capabilities. So I don't know, Benny. You know, there's one particular player, his name is Jack McGlynn, who I've always liked since his youth days. And folks, the typical MLS US men's national team coverage about Jack McGlynn was like, oh, he's a nice player, smooth, but he doesn't have the physical tools. It's always the same fucking shit, Benny. Oh, he doesn't have the physical tools, too slow, the blah 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 blah. But ever since he got elevated with the U17 youth national team, and some of his colleagues on the national team were shipped to Europe, you know, the Philadelphia Union just said, oh, I guess we fucking need to play this kid, you know? So they started playing him, and he started proving people wrong. He became a very important asset for the team. Now he's in Houston, plays well, and Pochettino kind of seems to like him, you know, and has called him several times, even though he's very, very young. And so clearly, if Pochettino's doing that, it signals to me, he fucking knows. Pochettino just fucking knows. How is he not going to know? Of course he's going to know. But the challenge, Benny, is that Jack McGlynn is playing Major League Soccer, okay? And his competition in the central midfield of the U.S. men's national team, they're playing in Europe, and they're hardened, and they have more experience, and they're, you know, like, so how can you, even with the right attributes, how can you say, if you're Pochettino, say, okay, Jack McGlynn, you're going to be my guy and be the starter at the World Cup. Dude, unless McGlynn fucking gets his ass to Europe ASAP, to Spain, say, or something, and is elevated there and gets experience, I don't see it happening, man.
Yeah. Well, it's also like we mentioned, like, environment matters, right? We mentioned Lamine Yamal and his success right now in Barcelona, but because of his environment and because of the players that are around him. I mean, imagine Jack McGlynn in any team in La Liga, and just the amount of quality that's going to be surrounded by him, and just going to elevate him as a player. And not only that, like, yeah, we always talk about the pressure of every single match in Europe. I mean, in MLS, it's every game, walk in the park, basically.
Chill mode. And this is not to say that if Jack were to get his opportunity overseas, that it would work out, because there's all kinds of factors too.
Yeah, 100%, Gary. Bringing it back to building out of the back. When Brian had his Rage team, I know they did play, or they did build out of the back, but was it rehearsed as much as it was when he had that famous YouTube team, the TFA team? And how much time did he spend, you know, rehearsing building out of the back? Was it a weekly thing? Or
I think the training with the Rage team, and you're gonna have to talk to him, was a little bit different. The activities were a little bit different. I think he was mostly making it up as he was going along. It's kind of like, I know I want my team to control possession and build. I know we want to do that. Okay, so how do I do that? And so I think he just invented a lot of things to make it happen versus the famous U11 team. Obviously, he was much more experienced, and obviously he had gone overseas to Barcelona and you know, watch Luis Enrique and watch, you know, La Masia train, all that stuff. So he brought a lot of the tools that they use over there here. He's like, okay, now I'm going to train how to build out of the back like this, you know. Again, you're going to have to ask him because my memory fails me. I don't know if with the Rage team we did like, you know, the back four and the keeper, and it was just all unopposed, like, you know what I'm saying? And just, okay, let's build, you know, all that sort of stuff. I don't recall that very much.
I feel like
how long, I think you asked me how long you do the activity for or something like that. I don't know. It depends on how sophisticated the team is. In the very beginning, you do it a lot more than, you know, a year later and a lot more than 2 years later. But if you're going to rehearse building out of the back in its most basic form, I don't know, maybe you do it for 15 minutes or something like that in a session, and then you move on to something else. I think 15 minutes, kind of like every session, is more than enough to get a team who's never seen it before to start getting used to the concept and then start deploying it in the match.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think I remember with that Rage team, at least in the pregame warmup, like they would have the back four with the keeper swinging the ball around, including the six. So I do remember that. I don't remember the training though, but
got it.
In terms of
you're right. Okay. You're right. Because I do remember Brian or the six simulating, you know, with the ball, you know, whether we're moving forward or whether we're moving back, and having the center backs backpedaling and then stepping, and it was all shadow play. So you're right, man. That was happening quite a bit.
Yeah. In terms of actually training this, Gary, see, when a team is first starting out, you want to do it unopposed. No, but as they get a little bit older and a little bit more complex, you know, how important is it to add in those players, like a front line of three pressing them? And the other question, Gary, is, do you think the build out line, I'm sure you're aware now of the build out line. I know back when you were playing, it wasn't a thing, but now for 7v7, there's a build out line where the opposing team has to start, I think it's 20 yards away or like 25 yards away. Do you think that ruins a team's chance to start learning how to build out of the back? Because I feel like when they get to the point where there is no build out line and now the other team can be right at the top of the 18, they're so used to having so much time and space, and for them, it's difficult to make that transition early on. So do you think the build out line is effective? Like, should it be there?
I don't know is the short answer. I don't know, because everybody knows I haven't been involved in the youth game for 7 years. I don't know how long it's been at this point. And I think for me to give a good answer, you have to kind of live it and see the cycle, right? See the progression of the players, you know, from when they first start playing until they actually get rid of the build out line, and see what happens at that point. So that's the short answer, Benny, is I don't know. My gut instinct tells me if you don't give the youngest players that sort of cushion, it's, you know, if I were the opposing coach, I would be like, oh, let's go press the shit out of them up front at the youngest of ages. And with me as the coach, the other team will never build out. It's impossible, because it's not going to happen. You know what I mean? I'll just throw up a bunch of numbers up there, and they're either going to have to launch it or they're going to lose the ball right there in their own final third and get scored on. So from that perspective, maybe it's a good idea, but I think your point is well taken, in that if you give them that cushion for such a long period of time, and then all of a sudden the following season, they get all this pressure thrown at them. I don't know, Ben. What are your thoughts? Do you think it is damaging and teams should be able to do? I'm usually the type that teams should be able to do whatever the fuck they want. Stop manipulating the rules. I hate this whole manipulation of the rules, you know? Oh, we want to encourage this, so we're going to create new rules so that it's artificially created for you. I fucking hate that.
Yeah. Well, I think, Gary, US Soccer implemented the build-out line so teams can start to train building out of the back, you know? And sure. It's funny because, you know, 20 years ago, building out of the back didn't exist to U.S. soccer. But I agree with you, Gary. I think manipulating the rules like that and adding something into the game that's not going to be there later. Like, for example, we talked last time about heading. Can't have the ball. I get it because of concussions and the kid's safety, right? But at a certain point, it's like, how much are you going to manipulate the game to where when you're 8 years old, you're playing a completely different game than what you are going to be playing when you're 12 years old, you know? As a kid, at like when I was 7, 8 years old, there was no build out line. And so myself as a center back or an outside back, like you just have to get used to a player already being on you or, you know, playing under pressure. So I don't know. I guess there's pros and cons to both of it. But if it was up to me, I don't think there would be a build out line. And to your point, Gary, you saying like, if you were the coach, you'll just have the team high pressing and the other team's never going to get out. Like, okay, well, guess what? That's life, dude. You have to figure out how are you going to counter the team that's high pressing you?
100%, 100%. And look, if I'm the coach and they're high pressing me, first off, I'm not a great coach. Brian is the superstar, of course. But let's just say if Brian was the coach and there was no build out line at the youngest ages or whatever, Brian's team is still going to build out on you even if you high press them. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it comes down to competence of the coach, right? Competence, straight up competence. So this whole thing about the build out line, in my opinion, again, manipulation of the rules, and that's what U.S. soccer MLS bozos like doing. They like making rules. Let's make some more rules and to control how everybody does the things that they do. They do that shit because everybody's incompetent, I suppose. I don't know.
Yeah.
But again, not only are the players getting screwed, but the coach now has no accountability for being incompetent because they have a build out line. They don't get exposed. Yep. You feel me? And by the way, if I'm in charge and you're high pressing me at those youngest of ages, yeah, I might just tell the players and train it. Let's bypass them. Go launch it long to our man child up front. And then we'll score 20,000 goals on you and watch. After the first couple goals, watch how they don't high press me anymore. And then I'm going to get to build out again.
Yeah.
So there, for sure. It's measures and countermeasures. So I don't know. And just speaking off the cuff with you, now I'm fucking pissed off. Why are we making new rules? Stupid shit, new rules. And all this stupid shit about, oh, let's not keep scores and let's not have a standings table. Fuck off.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's hilarious, dude. And you're right, Gary. I mean, I don't think, at least in SoCal soccer, you know, they might ban me. It's all good. I don't care. But, dude, it's fucking soft. They don't, I think until you're U13 or U14, in literally the league, Gary, like the fall, the main league of the season, no standings are kept, dude. And I'm pretty sure even like 77, I don't even know if they post the scores. Fucking soft, dude.
But anyway, Stupidest shit on fucking earth. Kind of a fucking world that we living in, man.
Yeah, it's crazy, man.
You got the Uruguayan kids at age 5 kicking the shit out of each other in a literal cage match, an indoor soccer cage match. They fucking beat the shit. It's called baby football. People, if you have, we've talked about it in the podcast before. If you don't know what I'm talking about, do a little Google search right now or go to ChatGPT or Grok or whatever. Type in what is baby football in Uruguay and you're going to fucking find out. And here we're like, oh, let's not keep score until they're 12 years old because it might hurt some feelings, you know, if you're in last place. What the fuck is going on?
Yeah, I'll insert a clip of baby football in Uruguay right here. But no,
What the fuck is going on? Benny, what the fuck is going on? I could not even imagine being involved in coaching anymore and coaching youth anymore or coaching the little ones anymore. You probably can't, you can probably barely even coach because if you fucking try to be a little too animated as a coach, too passionate as a coach, you might get parents saying, oh, why are you being so aggressive? You know, what the fuck is going on, Ben?
No, dude, you can't even be animated like towards a referee anymore, dude. There's zero abuse tolerance. I think that's the phrase that they use, dude. Like you say one thing to a referee, straight red, dude. Imagine how many red cards Brian would get right now if he was coaching youth soccer, dude.
Again, it all comes down to power and control. The bureaucrats, the politicians, they want more and more and more power and more and more and more control. They want to control everybody. They want to control you, what you can say, what you can do, how you can dress, how you can drive. You fucking name it. Control, control, control. It has nothing to do with safety or fucking all this morality horseshit. It's all about concentrating more power to them and making you a fucking slave. Sorry, I said fuck like a million times in this episode, and we're keeping it in. If you can't handle the word, this isn't for you.
Yeah, no, Gary, it's pretty wild. But, you know, I even had I had a game today with my 2015 team. So this is their first year of playing 9v9, and this is the first year that the build-out line was taken away. And so, Gary, the other team's goalie, like, gets a ball or they get a goal kick, and my guys are, like, ready to go and press, like sitting right at the top of the box. The other team's goalie is like screaming at the ref, like, ref, like, they're right there outside the box. And he's like, okay. You know, it's just like, that's what I'm saying. Like, for the kids to make that adjustment is, you know, it's difficult for them. But, you know, Gary, the cool thing about the more you rehearse building out of the back and the more that you train it, the players start to recognize patterns. For example, like my team is probably at the lowest level. And the goalie, like when he first came to the team, he's actually from Mexico. He just moved to California like maybe 5 months ago. But when he first came to the team, Gary, like he just make shocking decisions, like kicking it straight to the other team or kicking it to our worst guy, you know, just not the best decision. But even today I recognized, because we do try and play out of the back. So he'll play it to his center back, and center back will try and find the six. But the other team, now there's no build-out line. They sent like four guys, like same way that you said you would send your team. And the goalie recognized that. So he like faked it to our center back. He just bypassed the six and like straight to our nine, like just a perfect pass. And like this kid would have never made that pass, you know, 2 or 3 months ago. So the more that you rehearse it in training, the more game experience that you have, the players start to recognize patterns, and you don't have to be joystick coaching. They start to become autonomous and make their own decisions. So, but it comes down to the unopposed, you know, rehearsal of it at training and just helping them be aware of the situations.
Yeah. And then just throwing the pressure one at a time once they're ready for it.
For sure.
In training. Don't throw, if it's a back line of four, if you're playing 11v11, right? Don't throw three defenders at the back line of four right away. You know, do it with no defenders. And you're like, as the coach, you have to recognize, okay, they're probably ready. They kind of get it. Now let's throw in one defender to run like a chicken with his head cut off after them. And then, oh, look, they were successful in building out. Okay, throw the two defenders at them and see what happens there. And the thing will eventually fall to pieces because, you know, the players are still amateur and they're learning.
Yeah.
But don't go full pressure from the beginning. That's all.
And the other thing too, Gary, I think a lot of coaches miss this. You know, we can have a whole episode on this, but building out of the back from throw-ins, you know, from your outside back getting the ball, center back dropping off. There's so many ways to get out of the pressure situations. But if you haven't ever trained your players to recognize, like, hey, if you're the center back and you drop off all the way, maybe the 7 or the 11 like pushes up, even a little fake forward to the winger, get it to the center back, have him swing it. Like you can easily get out of, you know, a lot of situations like that. And I think also at the youth levels, you'll recognize a lot of youth teams, they, when they're defending, they all like shift over to one side of the field, like, and they're just leaving so much space on the other side. So you can get your players to recognize that and have them, that center back gets the ball, pings it quick, and then you go at them. I mean, there's so much space that you can take advantage of, at least in the youth game.
Yeah, throw-ins are a huge thing, dude. And I think that's another thing that, look, I'm not at every coach's training session. I just see the games. But in the games, I think you can tell whether a coach or a team or its players have been trained on throw-ins or not. And usually, none of them are trained in the throw-ins. It's kind of like, okay, I have a throw-in, let's throw it down the line. Or let me just pick a guy and just try to throw it to him, sort of thing. But the rehearsal is so important, Ben. And at the highest levels, the rehearsal is so important. And the earlier you do it, the more the players start recognizing things on their own as well, like you said, and the more the players start recognizing things in the professional game when they're watching professional matches. They're like, oh shit, okay, I see what's going on here. The two guys are doing these movements and the ball is being thrown in a rehearsed fashion. So all of it matters, Ben. All of it matters. Yeah. You know, I'm still fucking hung up on this not keeping scoring thing. I feel like I wanna create a website that is like a Wikipedia style website. I could whip this thing up pretty rapidly. And folks can voluntarily input their scores. We can create the different leagues that exist. We'll create the different leagues. We'll create the different age groups. We'll create the different brackets. We'll create the team names, all of that stuff. Or we'll just open sort. We open it so that people can take it upon themselves to do this in their local regions. And the parents of their local leagues, and they can just go in there after the game and say, okay, I'm going to go update my thing. You know what I'm saying? And we'll have tables and standings come back to the country.
Oh, dude, that'd be awesome. You might get canceled, dude.
You can't cancel me. I'm just providing a service. And people are just going in there and recording the scores of the weekends. That's it.
Yeah. No, dude, it won't work, though, because the teams that are always losing and don't want their scores, they're never going to input.
The opposing parents input it and the opposing coach inputs it, Benny. You can't get away from it. If you just beat the last place team, you're going on the website and you're saying, we just beat the last place team and it was 5-1 and here's the updated table now.
Yeah, sure. All right, dude, make it happen, bro.
Yeah, I'm seriously thinking about it now.
Oh, that's funny, dude. I wanted to get your thoughts on, I'm sure you've noticed this at the professional level now, you'll see a lot of teams, they're starting from a goal kick. They'll start the ball from their center back and hit it to their goalie when they're building out. I know that this is kind of like a new common trend that we're seeing. What are your thoughts on
yeah,
that?
No. So honestly, like I just mentioned, I met with Joey yesterday. We had a long chat. We caught up and I haven't been watching that many pro games. You know, we started talking about Lamine Yamal and the excitement that I'm having over it. And he concurred. It's kind of like, I don't know if it's a function of us getting older and coupled with other things, you know, demanding our attention. But a lot of it, I truly believe, has to do with Messi and Neymar, the amazing players, kind of like being done at this point. They don't exist anymore. So nothing's exciting. So I don't get all fucking happy. Oh, Champions League tomorrow. I'm going to go watch because nobody tickles me. I don't feel compelled to say, ooh, Vinny Jr. is playing at noon. I'm going to tune in to watch Vinny Jr. Like, I could care less, honestly. And even something like Man City, where we love Pep and we love how he builds teams and he revolutionized English soccer now when everybody said he can't. I'm not that interested in watching Man City. Who am I going to watch in Man City? Phil Foden? Like, okay, he's an amazing player, but he's an amazing player. He's good, but I just don't care that much. You know, or Kevin De Bruyne or something. Okay, another amazing player, but it just doesn't get my juices flowing. And so now with Lamine Yamal and me tuning in, happen to have tuned into the Inter match, I'm like, oh, okay, now I can't wait to see what this kid can do next. So I'm into it. All of this to say, Benny, that when you're asking me, oh, now there's this trend where the center back plays the keeper off of goal kicks, and like I haven't been putting on my hat. I haven't watched that many games now, for number one. Number two, unless I have players I have personally invested in playing, I don't put my analyst hat on or my coaching hat on or anything on and sit and say, okay, what is it that they're doing here? Let's break this down. Let's dissect it. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you know why they're doing it?
I think it just creates more options and better angles. But I think it can only be achieved if you have a goalie that can – is technically proficient and is able to execute under that pressure. So, but I mean, I get why they do it. I mean, especially if you have only from the other team, you have 1-9 pressing. And if you, from the goalie to center back, and if they're cutting off the passing lane to the other center back, then your options are limited. But if the center back hits it to the goalie, then you can go either way of the field. So I don't know. I guess it's just, I don't know who came up with it, but I'm curious to see if we're going to continue to see that trend or not.
Yeah, no, it is kind of interesting. Yeah. But you do need a technically competent keeper, man. Otherwise it'll fall to pieces.
100%, dude. Otherwise, you'll get scored on if so you're the probably, coach or the other team in there.
So Benny, you're probably seeing it on clubs that have a competent keeper, right? You've probably not seen it everywhere.
I actually haven't seen it at the youth level. Mm. And when it comes to high school, I actually had my team because my last season, we had a really good goalie with her feet. So I had my team. We trained it a couple times in training and it actually was pretty effective. You know, I don't know for the players, it was like, oh, coach, why are we doing this? We've never done this before. This is weird. You know, so I don't know, man. Maybe in the comments, people can put their thoughts on that. But yeah.
Yeah. And for the coaches out there, little tip, I'm sure you're aware of it, but if you're not, it's very important. Put your keeper in the same training activities as your field players. Put them in all the rondos religiously. Don't have your field players doing rondos and your keepers out there like blocking shots or doing keeper sort of things. Put them in the rondos. Let them develop their technical capabilities.
Yeah. Gary, what's the best piece of advice you can give to a coach who's working with a youth team and they want to start building out of the back? You know, what's the best piece of advice you can give them?
Benny, join the 343 program, dude. I hate it. I hate being salesy, but that is the best piece of advice. You fucking join the program. End of story. Join the program. See how Brian does it and go do it.
Simple.
I don't have another answer. Can you please give your advice that does not include the program, Benny? I want them to have that advice. Tell them what to do. Pretend the program doesn't exist. Here, I'll pretend the program doesn't exist if you don't want to do it. Watch a pro game, record a pro game. You don't have to record anything. Watch a pro game, watch Barca, and just create clips, if you will, or you don't have to, but I recommend creating clips of every time the team builds out of the back, from the goalkeeper, from the center backs, from goal kicks or whatever. Make 20 clips and watch those 20 clips religiously over and over again, and then go to your training environment and then set up your chess pieces, right? Your players, your back four, your back five, or your back three, or whatever, and have them go through the exact sort of pattern that those clips did. I think maybe that's a good strategy for you to deploy. The challenge is that you're seeing the team execute it in the pro environment, but you're not receiving the information of how to train it and how to coach it, you know, and you may be missing coaching points associated with certain things. So I don't know, Ben.
Yeah. What about, Gary, for teams that maybe they're just starting and the players aren't technically proficient? You know, a big issue that a lot of coaches will run into, even if they stick to it and they continue to rehearse it. Like if you're a brand new team, your players aren't very good on the ball, you're going to concede a lot of goals, you know? And if you haven't properly educated the parents as to what it is that you're trying to accomplish, then you're going to start running into dilemmas of, which, why are you doing this? Our kids are getting scored on every time. Why don't we just launch it forward? You know, so I think one, you really have to educate the parents, but two, you can't give up on it, dude. Even if, you know, you're building out of the back and you get scored on it because of that, like twice or three times in a game, like you keep working at it, you keep rehearsing it, dude.
Yeah. No, that's a good angle. I thought about the training angle and you're thinking about the
right. No, yeah, for
this
sure.
Stuff, which is just as, if not equally or more important. And also with sticking with it and not giving up, that is so critical, because if you abandon it, it's going to break your players' confidence and it's going to break the parents' confidence in that you know what you're doing. If that makes sense. Like if you just, oh, let's not do this shit anymore. It's kind of like, oh, well, you just instinctually know that, like, does coach know what he's doing versus, yeah. And then the next time you try to do it again, the players are all going to be trembling and shaking in their boots because of what happened, you know, several games ago or whatever. So you have to be the coach. Hey guys, it's okay. It's great. When we actually turn the corner and become masters at this thing, it's going to be the greatest feeling in the world. Let's keep doing it, you know, and then you encourage the players, you know, the players feel trusted. The players feel like, fuck it. Okay. Coach wants me to do this. I am going to do this. It doesn't matter what happened in the past.
Yeah. 100%. And I think it's not enough to just have like one parent meeting or, you know, one conversation with the parents. You got to continue to educate them, dude. Like, I can't, dude, I've had like already four or five team meetings with this particular team. And even like today, one of the kids passed back to the goalie. And one of the moms is like, what are we doing? Like, why would you do that? You know, get the ball out, launch it out, you know? So you got to continue to educate them, dude. If they don't know that, you got to help them, dude.
Yeah, man.
And if you do that, I mean, you're making your job and your life easier, dude, because if you're constantly having parents on the sideline that are saying something else than what you're saying, it's, you know, one, the kids aren't going to learn anything, but two, it's like, for as a coach, it's just, it's annoying, dude. You don't want to hear like the objecting, especially when you have a set plan in mind and you're rehearsing a certain type of thing. And then to hear the parents like, what are we doing? Or, you know, Johnny, why would you make that pass to the goalie? It's like, come on, guys.
Yeah. Nonstop education, Bennett. But unfortunately, coaches aren't paid for doing that, which sucks. Coaches are poorly paid, very poorly paid, in my opinion. And now if you want to work in peace and you actually want to develop players, you have to do this extracurricular sort of stuff, which is a pain in the fucking ass. And it never ends, Benny. Because even if you, and you know this, even if you religiously are, quote unquote, educating the parents over months and months and months, and not just once, but over the course of time, it's still, you're still going to get outbursts on the field at some point. At some point, like even in Brian's case, where the team was the best in the country by far, you know, and you're winning, you're maybe in the championship final, U.S. Soccer Development Academy final, okay, playing 2 years up, and maybe that you're tied or something like this, and it's a tough game, and you're building out of the back, and you give, like, you still hear fucking parents who have been with Brian for 7 years kind of murmuring under their breath, the fuck, we should go forward. Like, what is this shit? Like, on it, Benny, it doesn't end, dude.
Yeah, dude, it never stops, bro.
Pep Guardiola has to put up with this bullshit too, even after everything that he's proven.
Yeah, from his wife, dude.
Oh, Jesus. Carlo Ancelotti. Ancelotti, you know, lost the against Barca, is not going to win the league, kicked out of the Champions League. And Carlo Ancelotti all of a sudden is like, he's done. It's fucking over. He doesn't know what he's doing with his team anymore. Get fucking Klopp in here. Get fucking somebody. Oh my God, dude. So this is the life you chose, Benny. Thank God I didn't choose it.
Hey, no, but that's why it's good that there's a 343 parent education program too.
Yeah.
Anyways, dude.
We're trying to do our part.
100%.
You know, honestly, what we should be doing is telling all these coaches who are trying to do the right thing and building out of the back and all this sort of stuff. We should maybe institute a program for them to somehow get their parents in the master class.
Honestly.
Because if their parents went into the master class, then basically the parents of that coach are going to be learning the philosophy and the methodology and the ideas and the development ideas and all this stuff that are in line or in aligned with their coach. Yeah. Right. So it could potentially make the coach's life a lot easier. I don't know. I have to think about that more. Maybe we can give the coaches a kickback for every parent that they get on the masterclass. I don't know.
No, dude, you just make it a, so what is a masterclass? Like $275. You just make it $1,000 and the whole team gets access. All the parents get access to it. Each parent kicks in $100, dude, and have lifelong education, dude.
Yeah, maybe that's a possibility. The other thing that I know for a fact is important is humans need to themselves open up their own wallet and be invested in a product or service for them to take it seriously.
Yeah, for sure.
You feel me?
If a coach is saying, go ahead. No, I was just going to say, if the coach is telling you like, hey, sign up for this program, and then the parents don't even have to pay for it, like they're going to open it once and then that's it.
100%. I can't tell you how many times, you know, a club has approached us over the years since the launch of the program. They're like, oh, we want to get all our coaches on the program and stuff. You know, let's cut a deal or something. And I've gone ahead and done that for entire clubs. And guess what? Because all the coaches get it for free at that point. It's the club that's paying. Guess what ends up happening? The coaches don't really pay much attention to it.
Yeah.
No, man, you have to fucking open up your wallet and be invested in right. whatever it is that you want to do.
For sure.
So, but anyway, just a thought that crossed my mind. Maybe we need to supply some kickbacks to the coaches to get their parents aboard.
Yeah, dude, that'd be cool. A lot of people, Gary, they want the live Q&A, man.
All right. Well, we can do it, Ben. I think so. There's a lot of folks on the East Coast as well. I don't know what time to do it. I would think maybe something like 4 or 5 p.m. Pacific time maybe might work. 4 p.m. Pacific is 7 p.m. East Coast. And I don't know when people get off work, but people have to train. The coaches have to train teams. So that might be a challenge too, Benny, is picking a time.
I think probably like a Friday, maybe at like 5:30, maybe 8:30 East Coast time. I think that would work out pretty well.
Okay. Well, that's going to cause a lot of divorces too, maybe. Who knows?
Hey, dude, some people are just invested and bought in, dude.
Yeah.
I love it, man.
No, babe, I have to tune into this live. I have to tune into this live stream for soccer. Like, what the
Yeah, no, that's funny, dude. Dude, there's some really cool, people out there and some of our fans always commenting, and you can tell like these guys just love the game and always trying to educate themselves. It's badass, dude. There's one guy that always comments like negatively on anything that you say. So I'm curious as to why he keeps tuning in, dude.
Hey, maybe he's an MLS plant.
Oh, man. Maybe, dude.
All right, dude, this was a good one. I know you said building out of the back, but maybe losing your man, but let's leave losing your man for another day.
For sure. Yeah, I think we touch on a lot of good things, man. Hey, really quick, promotion relegation and building out of the back.
What about it?
How does it tie in, dude?
Well, first off, if we want to talk youth level, clearly freaking standings have to be kept, okay? So we get rid of all this no scores and no standings horse shit, right? If there's pro rel, because you have to know who's at the top of the league, who's at the bottom of the league. So that's a huge plus in and of itself. It gets rid of the softness of American soccer here at the youth level too. If there's promotion and relegation, no more, oh, it doesn't matter, you're eighth place, here's a medal for you, good participation season, we'll get them next time, team. None of that horse shit. And then from a building out of the back perspective, which was your topic for the day, look, the ones who build out of the back, like we gave the examples with Brian at the youth level, with Caleb Porter at Akron, with Tata Martino at MLS level, the ones who build out of the back end up being the most successful. Those are the coaches and teams and the players who end up being elevated to higher levels as a consequence of that. And the ones who don't build out of the back, well, if you run into teams that do build out of the back, you're in trouble and you ain't going to win. And so you're going to get exposed as a fraud. So this is the meritocracy that we need, Benny. There you go. Pro-rel will encourage building out of the back.
Yeah, dude. No, I agree. I think the only thing that sucks, though, Gary, is especially at the youth level, like a lot of teams that don't build out and they have that man child, bro. Like it's literally just center back to the man child goal, and this is a team that's attempting to build out of the back. I mean, you could be potentially screwed at the young ages, man.
Yeah, it's true. But see, here's how it's all connected. So if there's promotion relegation at the pro level, all these youth clubs, youth only clubs, or a vast majority of them, like overseas, would have a first team. And the first team would either be in the first division, second division, third division, fourth division, and some tier of the pro system. And so the club itself would be incentivized to develop players for their first team. And they know that if your strategy at 12 years of age is to kick the ball up to the number 9 and just have that man child run forward and score, they know that that is not going to develop a player properly for their first team. And that's not developing their midfield. It's not developing their center backs. It's not developing their outside backs. And it's also not developing their 9. Because at the pro level, the 9 isn't just going to be able to run by everybody and score because he's not a man child anymore. So guess what? With promotion relegation, the club would issue a directive to its youth coaches and its youth teams. We are going to build out of the back. We're going to teach these players how to properly play football.
Yeah. Good stuff, Gary. I think one day I'll be able to stump you, bro.
I believe it too. I'm sure. Look, we all have blind spots, bro. I'm sure I have many blind spots. It's just that in this particular domain, it's kind of tricky, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, because I've thought of so many things, and like that one critic that you say is always lurking on the channel or something. I've had critics for fucking 20 years, Benny. And I listen, I read what they have to say, and I read even the non-critics. I read all the nonsense that's online. So I'm like, okay, let's think about what it is that they believe. And what's my answer to that? So I've been doing this for 20 years, dude.
If anything ever happens to you, I'm going after MLS, bro.
I love it. I love it. Well, the cool thing is eventually we're going to develop this AI that knows everything that basically I know, because we have thousands of hours of audio of me talking about soccer and all this sort of stuff. We have hundreds of podcasts. We have hundreds of videos. We have hundreds of articles. We have entire education programs. We have my tens of thousands of tweets online over 10 years. And so we're going to feed all this data into our AI, and the AI is going to, there's going to be a AI Gary out there, and I will fund this AI Gary to exist forever, and it will just keep continue the work.
Badass thing. Hey, what about all the sensitive information that's, you know, I'm not talking about like, you know, player contracts and stuff like that, but all the like the behind the scenes stuff with MLS, are you going to feed that into the AI?
I don't know. We'll have to make design decisions for sure.
All right.
Dude. I mean, at this point, Benny, like, what does it matter? You can't hurt me. So I think the AI should know everything and use everything in its toolkit to fulfill its objectives.
Yeah, true, dude. Hey, another movie for you. I'm sure you've seen. Have you ever seen this movie called Transcendence with Johnny Depp?
No.
So, dude, this movie came out like probably 10 years ago, dude. And it's about like this, like the world's smartest, like he was building basically an AI, right? And the world was, you know, scared that AI was going to take over. So these people like plotted to kill him, right? And so like they shot him or they stabbed him, but this guy figured out how to basically transplant his brain to an AI. And so like when he passes away, his girl that's still there, like she like, you know, writes all this code or whatever. And then this little comes back like as an AI, and this guy just like ends up taking over the world.
Jesus.
It's insane, dude.
I'm going to look it up right now on Rotten Tomatoes. Transcendence.
Yeah, Transcendence.
2014 film. 19% on Rotten Tomatoes. Benny, you're recommending trash movies.
Nah, dude. I mean, you'll like it, bro. It's AI, bro. The fucking critics, they don't know, dude. No, but dude, this movie was like way ahead of its time, bro. 11 years ago. I'm serious.
All right. I'm gonna take a look, man. I'm gonna take a look, and next time we record, you're gonna ask me about it. I'm gonna give you my opinion. I swear, I'm gonna watch it. I swear to God, I'm gonna watch it. But no, dude, the whole AI thing is, I mean, I can talk forever on it. Obviously, I've written code forever, and I've been using these LLMs since they first, actually before ChatGPT even came out. I was playing with some of this stuff. It's quite scary, honestly. I mean, this might be the whole reason for the great filters. Have you heard of the great filters?
No.
So Fermi, Enrico Fermi, a physicist, came out with what is now coined the Fermi paradox, which is if there are aliens out there, and the universe, so where are the aliens? There should be some sign or some signal that there is intelligent life out there. So that's the great paradox sort of thing. And then kind of the answer to that is that there might be civilization level or pre-civilization level filters that exist that don't allow intelligence to evolve to the point where they explore space and are super highly technological, like on level one, level two, level three on the Kardashev scale. And so those are the filters. And one possibility of a great filter is that all life, intelligent life, civilization level life, eventually develop artificial intelligence, and that artificial intelligence ends up destroying them one way or another. And that's what happens. That's just what happens with everybody. And so that's why there's no aliens.
That's insane.
So we might be in trouble, Benny. I don't know. The world's going to get fucking crazy, dude. It's going to get so crazy.
Yeah. Well, wait till you see how they shut down fucking Johnny Depp, dude.
Okay. Well, we don't even have embodied AI yet. And what I mean by that is imagine these AIs who now have bodies, like humanoid bodies, like the Tesla bot. So you're going to have these freaking robots walking around that can engage with you on any subject and do any task. And yeah, dude, I don't know. It's pretty creepy.
Seriously, dude.
I'm down for it though. Don't get me wrong. I'm looking forward to see what happens.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, dude, even Trump might become the next pope. This guy's crazy, dude. I was on X and like you see a legit post from the White House and it's like a fucking AI photo of Trump as the pope.
Yeah, we live in wild times. That's for sure, Ben. Dude. Wild times, wild, wild times. But again, I'm up for it. I think a lot of things do need to change. So we'll see what happens.
All right, brother. I think the audience will enjoy this one, dude. I mean, I'm leaving everything in, dude.
Okay, well, let's see if everybody sticks to the 1 hour and 20 mark. Let's see.
All right, brother. Good stuff, dude. I'll see you on Monday, yeah?
Yeah, I'll see you on Monday. Definitely.
Later.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant, possession-based football, while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.